Good morning, everybody. This is Thursday, September 7th. We're here at the 9 o'clock County Administration Workshop. Our first item on the agenda is real estate purchase and sale agreement between Josephine County and the Illinois Valley Senior Center, LLC, for the sale of county real property located at 102 South Railroad Highway. Mr. Watson, will you introduce yourself for the record?
Good morning. Mike Watson, property manager.
All righty.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, I should say before we get going, attendance today, Mr. Hare is not here. Commissioners DeYoung and Morgan are present.
Very good. Well, what I have before you is the real estate purchase and sale agreement. This has gone through a number of various iterations until we finally got to this final position, which we believe covers all of the aspects in regards to the purchase by the Illinois Valley Senior Center of our property at 102 South Redwood Highway, also known as the Cave Junction Building. They have made an all-cash offer of $340,000, and this agreement reflects that. They are expected to ratify this agreement today in their board meeting, and the principal I've been negotiating with will bring the $70,000, which represents a little more than 20% down payment, tomorrow, along with signed agreements by their principals, which is their president, secretary, and director. And I've been negotiating with Sam Nichols on this agreement. We are not conveying to them the RF radio tower that sits just outside of the property, nor are we conveying the personal property equipment that drives those towers. We have a 30-year leaseback agreement that will be produced prior to the closing of this sale. It's a 20-year lease initially with 2 5-year terms. All of those terms are $1 a year charged to the county. We are required to put a separate electric meter so that we are paying for our own utilities. And we also have granted from them a 6-month window in which to allow our public health department to continue providing services one day a week in their current location. I see this as a beneficial agreement. It gives us the protections we need. The 20-year lease back gives us the opportunity to maintain our radio equipment there, even though it is our goal to find a relocated location for that equipment. This just provides us a guarantee or insurance policy, so to speak, that it can remain until such time as we find a new location.
And all the other tenants that are out there, that's their, they're going to take care of all those.
Yes.
We're talking health and the town.
Yes. The folks at the Illinois Valley Senior Center are very committed to finding locations for our current tenants, which include Illinois Valley Soil and Water, Illinois Valley Baptist Church, and the Food and Friends program. Whether or not they can accommodate those folks at the location they're currently in, or whether or not they move some of those services or make available the senior center for some of those services, will be determined by the new purchaser.
Okay. Has all the requirements that we've put in place for us, them for the electricity, us for all that, is that something that is doable? Have you met with facility services to make sure that time frame is okay?
I have spoken with Mr. Ryan Johnson, and yes, that is certainly doable. 6 months, a 6-month period in which to place a new power meter in order to separate those costs is ample time for that to be accomplished. And that 6-month window is written into this sale agreement as well. Additional insurance for us.
Do you have any other questions?
No.
Any objection for this to be moved next week?
I think we ought to just move it on. It sounds good.
Sounds good.
You covered everything we talked about this for quite some time, so you know, in the last month or so, and we had some concerns at previous meetings, and I think you've got those ironed out.
Very good. Would you like me present at next Wednesday's weekly business session for this?
Well, then here's the key. we're going to be in Cave Junction. So I would love to say, yes, we would like you present for it, but realize that it's a Cave Junction drive, and we'll be meeting at the council chambers at the City Hall in Cave Junction. It might actually be very appropriate, considering finishing the contract in the town where the building is.
If you would like me there, I would love to present.
Why don't I have you work that out with your liaison?
Okay.
And if you are unable to be there, make sure that he has the right information to present it.
Absolutely.
Since he's not here right now.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Next on our agenda is our libraries. Josephine Community Libraries, Inc. and Josephine Community Library District request the transfer of the Grants Pass lease, transfer of ownership of the Williams and Illinois Valley branches, buildings and real property, and transfer of ownership of all capital items to the newly formed Josephine Community Library District. Mike, are you in on this one as well, or is it Wally or somebody else?
No, I believe Pat was going to be here. I shall go retrieve her.
Okay. Oh, sorry, Pat. When Kate sat down, I didn't see you. And so it was just the perfect silhouette.
I'd like to introduce you to Pat for me.
Yeah. Pat, come on up. My apologies, I couldn't even see you. All right, well, you both introduce yourself for the record.
My name's Kate Lasky. I'm the library director.
Pat Ellison from Legal Counsel's office.
Wonderful. Thank you, and my apologies for being blind as a bat. All right, let me just pull up. Kate, are you presenting this, or is it just... I know we've talked about the topic and moving forward, so I'm not sure.
I'm happy to present. I spoke with Mr. DeYoung as our liaison.
Okay.
And he set it up for me to attend this meeting and present. Also, there's the memo. I don't know if you have a copy of the memo.
It is in our packet. I am going over it now.
Okay, so I can present from the memo. The Library District and Josephine Community Libraries Incorporated request the transfer of the Grants Pass lease, transfer of ownership of the Williams and Illinois Valley branches, buildings, and real property, and transfer of ownership of all capital items to the newly formed Josephine Community Library District. The background information that may be helpful to the decision-making process includes the history of closure and reopening of the libraries, and how much money has been invested in libraries since its closure from the community and from foundations. Then further, I think what's important in the decision-making process is that Josephine County holds three leases with JCLI, the nonprofit, for the Grants Pass Williams and Illinois Valley Branch Library buildings. They are attached to the memo for your reference. They have an amendment, and they are in works until 2020. The capital items, such as furniture and books, currently inside the library buildings, is also being requested. And the list of capital items, as well as an assessment of the collection materials owned by the county, is also in the packet. It is important to note that the lease agreements function as a contract for public library services, as viewed by the Oregon State Library, with a nominal fee of $1 per year rent from JCLI to Josephine County for each of the three buildings. We have paid in full to 2020. JCLI has provided Josephine County with public library services for free since 2009. The longstanding relationship has served Josephine County's charter requirement, section 14.5, to provide for the support and maintenance of the main library and library branches. The fourth library branch in Wolf Creek is actually owned by the Josephine County Library Foundation, so that is not in discussion today. And now that a library district measure has passed and we are in the process, well, you have formed the library district, the people have formed the library district, but the newly elected board is still forming itself by passing policies and getting up and running. Now that that's occurred, there's a request for these capital items and real property to be transferred to the district. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
On Williams, it says buildings and real property. We don't own the property in Williams, do we?
No, that's just for the Illinois Valley branch.
Okay, well, it says in here, transfer of ownership of the Williams and Illinois Valley branches, buildings, and real property. So
true.
But we don't own the real property.
No, the parenthetical should have followed the Illinois Valley branch for real property, but both the Williams. You own the building in Williams, and you own the building
and property
in
Illinois Valley.
Yeah, so thank you for clarifying.
I just didn't want to think that you were going to get the real property in Williams.
Nope, there's no. The Three Rivers School District owns that property.
Okay.
And I, just to clarify, the subject matter says Williams and Illinois Valley, but down below under the, in the second page under request, it delineates it differently, where it says Illinois Valley branch, real property and building, and the Williams branch building. So it says it differently in the actual request down below. So you're currently paying a lease for the Grants Pass building. What's going on with the Williams and the CJ one?
It's in the same state. It was $1 per year until 2020.
Okay.
So then we would ask for a transfer of the lease to the library district for $1 a year mm-hmm. for the Grants Pass branch, and then a transfer of the building in Williams, and then a transfer of the building and real property in Illinois Valley to the district.
Okay. I guess for me, I'm able and willing to go forward with the lease change. I wasn't anticipating transferring of property and such, and I want to make sure that we've gone through our due process of what has to happen for that to happen. In my opinion, Mike Watson should be a part of that arrangement, and this should be going through him with legal in that process. Because he's our real properties person. Yes, sir.
This whole thing started about, 3 weeks ago, I think, when Kate brought me that packet.
Okay.
And I called Mike in because it was a property transfer, and Mike took it to legal, and they've hashed it all out and everything, and we've kind of, I think we had at one of our general discussions, Simon and I said we want to be out of the library business and agreed to that. And so the reason Kate was bringing it here is I was in anticipation that the whole board would be here to hear this whole thing so we're not hearing it piecemeal.
Yeah.
And just get to basically so you could hear it straight from Kate. Miss Lasky, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And
thank
that, and that way all three of us would be on board at the same time, at the same meeting, so that everything was cleared up. There's a bunch of nuances. There's a bunch of different portions in that packet, but this one's just the real property side of it.
So do you have everything met on your side?
I think what we're doing right here today is that the board agrees that to start down the process of transferring this. We're not transferring it here.
Okay. From my standpoint, if it comes to admin on Thursday, it's going to weekly business session for us to vote on the next Wednesday. So if it's come to this point, we have all our ducks in a row. And so I'm just checking to make sure we have all our ducks in a row before we move it to a weekly business session.
So legal hasn't moved forward with it until we hear from the board that that's what they want to do, that they are approving this request from JCLI in the district.
Okay, so.
So then we would need to do board orders.
I am willing to say yes, legal, move forward with making negotiations for the transfer of properties. I'm not willing to say I agree to a request that we haven't worked out the details and all that other kind of stuff until we actually see what the final is through legal. But yes, I don't have a problem with it moving forward.
Moving forward.
To legal to figure out the details.
Okay.
Do we have a timeline? I'm just asking.
Well, I'm certain they want it as quickly as possible.
I get that, yeah.
Before we need to have the sewer or the pipes snaked again out in the Illinois Valley, might be prudent.
Well, and from my standpoint, it probably should have come to a Tuesday legal meeting where
we could put it on our meeting next Tuesday and just explain what the process would be and get a final buy-in from the board as far as is the board going to approve the entire request
And that's where I'm coming from, is this is news to me that we were transferring real properties. Changing the leases, I'm okay for moving ahead today on that. Yep. As far as a transfer of the real properties, it's not that I'm against it. I just want to make sure we're doing it in the right order and that everything's taken care of. And when my real properties guy said he doesn't have everything in order, I want to make sure we are doing this right. And so I don't think it's ready to go to a weekly business session next week.
No. There's nothing to put on weekly business session.
Okay.
But
so the request today is actually that we move forward with getting this process negotiated and worked out, that you can bring back a contract for us for transfer of stuff.
Yes.
I think it's that the board agrees that we want to move forward with this request.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Which includes the building and real property and the lease transfer and the collection.
Yes.
And the list of inventoried items in the three buildings.
Yes. So if all three of us agree that's what we want to do, I think that's what you're looking to walk away from today's meeting, that the board is in agreement that we kick this thing in the pants and get it going.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear you, but I can say I support the request to work towards that, but until we actually have something in front of us that has the official
right.
stuff from the county, I'm not willing to say it's done. So whatever it needs to do to go through legal, to go through the legal channels to get the right stuff done, that's what I would support going forward with today.
I want to clarify something really quick. So I'm hearing two different pathways that actually lead nowhere, both of them. So one of them is we've put in a request and there's no official paperwork because I can't create official paperwork, but you can't make a decision about whether or not to push the request forward because there is no official paperwork. In order to get official paperwork, the board has to approve the request,
No, we don't have to approve the request. We just have to say legal work on the seeing the request be fulfilled.
Right.
And so that's what I'm asking. It does actually get somewhere. It gets us to the official paperwork.
Okay.
So that's what I'm asking is
okay.
that legal take the request and get it into official paperwork for us to move it down the official channels.
Which
so
would
we
include
can get it done.
The board order and all the other
deeds.
Correct.
Okay, great.
Right.
So the stuff that has to be worked forward so that we can bring it back on an admin to go to a weekly business after it goes through whatever it has to go through its process of, I mean, essentially the stuff that we are seeing at the top of our Thursday morning meetings or what we're saying will be next week we're voting on, it's done. And that means we have all our contracts in place. And so without those contracts in place, all we can say is move towards getting the official stuff in place.
So what would you anticipate the timeline to be for getting the official paperwork in front of the board at an admin meeting?
I have no idea what it would take for Mike and Pat and them to work that out with you guys.
I'm not sure what Mike's timeline is, but from our point of view, to get this on our meeting next Tuesday, I'm in the middle of another project right now that I can't stop. And so I would like at least another Tuesday. So
two Tuesdays.
Yeah.
Does it need to go to legal before it comes? It does need to go through
legal is essentially admin. I mean, anything
yeah.
that we put on legal could be moved to the following business session. It's just the difference between the Tuesday-Thursday meeting. But if we bring it to you on Tuesday, not this next Tuesday, but the following Tuesday, it could go to the following business session.
That'd be the 19th.
So is there any way that if it goes on the legal on the 19th that it actually can be on the WBS on the 20th? Can it be already on the agenda for the Wednesday the 20th so it doesn't have to put out a whole nother week after that? Or does it need to be a whole nother week after that so we're looking at September 27th?
Yes.
Okay. So that's the soonest that it could be
Thank
done
you.
Is September 27th.
I appreciate that.
But
Thank
that
you.
Will be the Wednesday meeting where it's voted on by the three in the public meeting that it's done.
The 27th of September.
Correct.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Sorry to be picky about procedure, but I want to make sure that it's done above board and done right so that there's no hiccups along the way that they come back and say this was missed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I 100% support you guys. I even paid for my silly lost library card last month, you know, because I, even though I'm in district and I will get it free soon, it's not there yet. So anyhow, yes, sir.
Yeah, if I may.
You might need to come up closer so the mic can catch you.
crank on the mic.
Mike Watson. Good morning. Mike.
See, I told you you were supposed to be up here.
My role in this would be to serve the direction of the board. If the board authorizes me and tells me this is our goal, then that is the goal that I take as my marching orders to move forward with the properties. And that's what I need to hear from the board, and that's why I think it would be best to have this heard in executive session.
Which can happen on that Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
So we'll do that, and it'll still come out on the 27th.
We still want the goal of the 27th on the weekly business session.
Understood.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it has to be executive session on the 19th,
yeah,
we can still make the 27th weekly business session.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure we're doing it properly, so sorry. But
no need to apologize.
We'll get
Thanks
there.
For the clarification, and now we have a date. I like having dates.
She does.
All right.
Deadline-oriented.
Anything else on that? Okay, so legal does have permission to move forward to get it into the legal process so we can go from there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right, we're going to move right along in order, considering I don't see any elected sitting and waiting. So our next up is transit amendment number 1 to personal services contract with Jarrett Walker and Associates.
Morning.
Hello, good morning. Morning. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Scott Chancey, Transit Department. This is an existing agreement that we have with Jarrett Walker and Associates to develop the Transit Master Plan. The actual original agreement expired in June, and the work's not done because I extended the public involvement period that we had due to the money that is anticipated coming in for transit in 2018. So this extends the contract to July 2018, doesn't add any more money to the contract. The existing contract was a little over $92,000. Doesn't change any of that, only extends the date. And I anticipate it'll probably be done in about 2 months, so we don't actually need the July 2018 date, but being that I work on the fiscal year, I just extended it, or added the request, extended all the way to June.
Who's your liaison? Are you
Commissioner DeYoung?
If we move this to consent, can you handle it? Or do
I think we're fine, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, does like...
Write me up something, I'll read it for consent.
Because we're going to be in Cape Junction next Wednesday.
This does a question. Okay. We don't have your master plan. The new one is not holding, and the lack of having the new and the current one, this new transit master plan, we're not holding up any grants or anything.
No. Okay. Nope, it's not holding up anything. It is just basically putting a document in place that hasn't been in place before.
Right.
As far as any of the new funding that's anticipated to come in through through the transportation package, this document will play a part in that, but it's not everything that the state needs, so it's not holding anything up.
Okay, cause a lot of times you have to have projects in a master plan before you're eligible.
Correct. Anything that we have in terms of funding is going through the first piece is it needs to be in the STIP. So all of our projects are in the STIP right now, okay. The State Transportation Improvement Program. So as long as they're in there, we're covered.
Okay.
So this gets us closer to having services up to 10 or 11 o'clock at night and on Saturdays? I'm just giving you grief.
No. Yes, it does get us that little bit closer. So
right.
We're on our way.
And that's just my hope.
And she wants a bus stop on 11th Street. was there any reason why they couldn't meet the June 30th, 2017 deadline?
Yeah, the reason specifically was is there's a public survey or is a web survey public involvement mm-hmm. that's out there right now. I wanted to keep that open. And I expanded my efforts to get input into that. Specifically, I went to AllCare and a few other organizations as well to see if we could get their members and clients surveyed. So it was at my request that this whole thing happened. And it's just I wanted more public involvement, knowing that we were having a considerable influx of funding coming.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything out there as far as asking for the involvement. But I'm hoping that you're getting the feedback that you need. You should mm-hmm. consider Community Corrections as a partner for collecting, because a lot of folks there use the bus.
I had not thought of that. I brought this in front of my the Special Transportation Advisory Committee, and they gave me about 9 other agencies to go, and Community Corrections was not one of that, so I appreciate that, and I will definitely reach out.
And I know they pass out bus tokens and stuff like that, you know, and getting people in for work crews and stuff, so it might be an option to consider.
I feel a little odd that I overlooked that one, but thank you.
No worries. I'm excited. I have family that moved here from a bigger city, and they immediately engaged in our public transportation system to get back and forth to work. And then one Saturday they're calling saying the bus is 20 minutes late and going to be late to work, so we're scrambling to help get them there. And like, by the way, the buses don't run on Saturdays. What? How can you not run on Saturdays?
We're working on it.
So I know you are.
I can get you something written up. Just email it over. Okay.
Yep,
all right, thank you.
That.
It'll be on consent next week.
Perfect, thank you.
Next up, we have Public Works Amendment Number 2 to Personal Services Contract with OBEC Consulting Engineers for the McMullen Creek Dam and Spillway Analysis. And as others, please introduce yourself for the record.
Chuck DeJambe, I'm the Public Works County Engineer. In 2015, I inherited this project from Doreen Ferguson, who was the Parks Director, who was leaving at the time. The dam is not rated real well for seismic and flood issues. So we're working on getting grants to study it. And right now we put in a draft application for funding for some actual work on the dam. The deadline has passed for the application. We submitted on time. Oregon Water Resources has asked us to do a little additional work on it. The consultant's contract with us expired at the time that the application date, just slightly after that. So for them to finish up the work, we just need to extend the contract. So and
there's additional cost for them to do the amendments.
Well, there's no additional cost from the original contract.
Okay.
But they're thinking, I think it was with all the study, I think they were somewhere $5,000 to $10,000 to finish off what they have to do.
So there is a cost to the county?
There is a cost, but no additional from the original contract with them.
Okay.
So we're just extending the time frame from that. And 50% of the cost is actually covered by the state of the contract.
So you're saying the cost to extend and amend is included in the original thing and the original pay that they've already received?
They have not received all the pay yet. There's still an outstanding balance in the original contract. They didn't spend all the money
down.
Right. And Arthur said there's still money in the fund for it. So the only thing we have to do, County Legal did the amendment for us. So all we have to do is extend the date and then... again, the money, no additional money from the original contract.
And they're going to be able to finish this up by the end of the year?
They'll be able to finish it up hopefully in the next month or two because the actual awarding of the contracts in November. I just picked December because I didn't want to come back for another week or two.
Right.
And it is kind of a rush, so I'm hoping we could get signatures today. Just so that we can get the information over to Water Resources and hopefully get the funding for that.
Is there any window of time you can work on that? You know, some creeks say you can't work on them and only before September 15th or something like that, and then after that you're done?
We're actually, the work, most of the work is outside of the lake area.
Okay.
It's on the backside, but there is a little bit of in water. I don't know on the lake what the requirements are offhand.
So I would entertain a motion to approve the amendment number 2 for the personal service contract with OBEC Consulting Engineers for McMullen Creek Dam and Spillway Analysis, extending the contract to December 31st, 2017.
So moved.
I'll second that. Any further comments?
Nope.
Let me take roll call.
Commissioner
Young?
Yes.
Commissioner Morgan?
Yes. All right. It carries. We'll sign it today. Get it going for you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, next up is Human Resources with a request for position addition to Facility Services, of which I need to thank Director Johnson for making the chirping in my office go away.
Well, it kept you on your toes. It was loud enough to...
You know it's bad when it's every 10 minutes. You've got people jumping off your couch.
Yeah.
Keep your meetings.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
The only bird in Josephine County.
Yeah, I'm no kidding.
Yeah,
for sure.
So, J.J. Schofield, HR Director. So, what I have in front of you today is a request for a position addition as a department assistant within Facility Services. Ultimately, the department would like to have better service both to external and internal clients, and this position is going to allow him to do that. So it will be answering phones and taking down some information and some data analysis stuff. So it's a fairly low-level position, primarily meant to be the person on the phone and directing work orders. So that's the purpose of the position. Finance has looked at it. It is within his budget to support it.
Arthur, I have a question for you. Can you come up here? So just so you're on the official answer. So on the paperwork in our packet, there is a note from Arthur saying it's not in the budget. It needs supplemental and supporting documentation. Is that information been received?
Yes, it has. Ryan provided the justification, and then we've got the information put together with, in order to do a supplemental at whenever we get to the supplemental process.
So it will need to go through the supplemental budget process.
The position itself was not part of the 17-18 budget, so the position itself is not there. The funding for the position is adequate. He's got enough funding, and that's the justification piece. To show that his revenues will cover the cost of this additional position. But the position itself was not part of the original approved budget.
And this, does it meet minimum wage?
Mm-hmm. Just barely.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any questions?
I have no questions at all.
All right. So does this need to... Where does it go? It doesn't go on consent, does it? It needs
it's,
to go to
It's a new
to
position,
national,
so it would go to admin.
It needs to go to admin, which will be in K Junction next week.
Very exciting. Sounds like something Ryan would enjoy.
Just saying. So, okay. We will move it forward to next Wednesday and go from there.
Okay.
At this time, we have... quarterly department update with Community Corrections.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good
morning. Morning,
sir. Nate Gowie ran for the record, Director of Community Corrections. Thanks for having me. I have a quarterly report for the board. Here's a hard copy for you.
You have one more, please.
I do. Would you like Commissioner Hare to have a copy as well? So I'll start on the first page with Field Services. As you're aware, we have three different divisions: Field Services, Custody Alternative Programs, and we have our Treatment Division. Our population went up by about 2% from the last time I did the quarterly report. So we are now over 1,000 offenders that we're supervising actively in Community Corrections. We have a number of different statistics on that first paragraph there, and I'll go down to some of the significant division notes. Currently, we're openly recruiting for two PO positions. We got roughly over $1 million increase from last biennium to this biennium. So it allows us to expand some of the services to supervise our high-risk felony population a little bit more efficiently and effectively.
And when you say you got over $1 million more, that's coming from
the
state budget.
Yeah, those are state funds. Yep. We are beginning our downward departure caseload. There is a typo there. It's not caseloads. We're only doing one caseload, specifically targeting prison usage for nonviolent offenders. We're planning to implement the basic needs PO, in which I went into extensive detail at one of the other weekly business sessions presented for the Justice Reinvestment funds, and again, that's from the state. We have expanded our gender-specific caseload of females to full-time caseload, which is roughly 40 female offenders, and that's very exciting for us. It's providing some supervision, treatment, and assessment services specific to the female offender population and their needs. We fully implemented the evidence-based practices incentives grid developed by the state, and that was another thing that was exciting because not only do we hold offenders accountable, but we also encourage them and make sure that we're supporting all of their efforts for being compliant. So that's one of the exciting things that we're doing on the positive end for the offender population. In terms of custody alternative programs, our work crew, we've seen an average worker daily count go from 9 from last quarter. Now we're at 13, which is about 2 full crews that we're sending out on a daily average. Accumulative daily worker count is up by about 20% to 990.
Now does that back off in the winter time? You know, I'm assuming that parks.
It just varies. It really
is changing what they're doing.
Yeah,
but there's still a need.
There is.
All winter long for work crews.
Yeah. Just like you said, Commissioner, it changes what they're doing. You know, in the fall time, they're raking leaves and cleaning up debris and different things like that. Sometimes they're flooding and high water marks. They bring in lots of different debris. And so in the summertime, it's mowing lots of lawns and doing all kinds of other fun stuff for the parks. So we have a lot of different contracts with ODOT and Parks. State now Parks are on contract, so that's an exciting new addition that is also in my quarterly report. But yes, it does vary from quarter to quarter, so you'll see some level of differences there. Our home detention sentence from court or move from jail, that decreased just slightly this quarter. Number of people served went from 131 down to 91. I'm not exactly sure, just anecdotally, it could be because we have more jail resource, and so that program may be minimized a little bit in terms of usage, but time will tell, you know, over the course of the next
Who determines year or so. Home detention versus jail?
We have a supervisory authority unit within Custody Alternatives Program. When somebody's sentenced by the court, they're told to come over to our agency. We do an assessment on whether or not they're appropriate to go into work crew or home detention or to the jail. If they're low risk, typically we'll allow them to do home detention or work crew if they're physically able to give back to the community in that way.
Are you seeing increases in numbers still with credit time served because the jail number is available, or are people still having a sentence left when after sentencing? Essentially using up all their jail time pre-trial.
I'll have to get back to you on that, Commissioner. I don't know.
Okay.
I could look into those details, though, for sure.
And your previous question about the numbers fluctuating back and forth, it depends on the courts and how often they push them through, oftentimes. So the courts can fluctuate those numbers mm-hmm. as they're moving them through. But. So how many state parks do we have within our borders? Forks Park and Cave Junction, but what other state parks are in Josephine County?
I think you named them. We'll have to... Yeah. Whatever's within our jurisdiction, we are now contracted to provide those services to the state parks. And
great.
We're not going to travel outside of Josephine County to provide those services, but at least we have the ability now to provide them to our state parks within our local geographic jurisdiction.
Nice.
It would make sense that Valley of the Road Park, because we're closer than Medford, it would make sense that Valley of the Road Park would be one.
I can check into that.
I mean, it's just hop, skip, and a jump.
Yes, you're right. The city divisions that we have are, in terms of the contracts, are moving to a 2-year contract, which helps us out in terms of paperwork that we have to file and go through the channels. So that's encouraging. We celebrated 20 years of dedicated service to our CAP supervisor in August. Her name's Annette Sorensen. She does great work, and that was something that was very much appreciated by her as well as the rest of our staff. So thank you, commissioners, for doing that for her. If we go to the next page, on the, I think it's double-sided for you guys as well, but treatment services, our outpatient treatment went down slightly. Our total population that we're serving right now is 77. And by the way, those are high-risk offenders. We got out of the business of supervising or providing treatment to our low-risk offenders within community corrections. We're outsourcing the treatment options there. So that might explain the drop in the total population. New enrollments, we had 47. As you can see from last quarter, we went from 96. We had new enrollments of 47, so those are high-risk people, but our population went down, so a lot of those folks were outsourced to other agencies. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they flunked out or were terminated unsuccessfully. It just means that we had changed treatment for them. For secure treatment at the jail, last quarter we had 34 that were served. This quarter we were up about 25% to 44 folks that were served. And our ADIS population, those are alcohol and drug evaluations that are typically from DUI offenders, and that went up about 30%.
That's too bad.
Yes, yeah, it is on one hand. On the other hand, it's good to get them assessed and into treatment so they can get help and,
does that
stop.
Does that go up in summer? People travel more, you know, you're going to go out to the river and drink a few beers and get popped on the way home. And
yeah, so a lot of times you'll see those numbers that get adjudicated in the summer, or at least arrested in the summer. They get processed and convicted in the fall. So typically we'll see an influx in the fall, and that kind of goes with crime in general. Typically we see a lot of arrests that happen when the sun comes out, car clouds, UUMVs, and, you know, assaults, because people get angry sometimes in the sun and they drink too much and what have you. So at any rate,
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
All right, with the treatment services, are you seeing a change with how you're doing your group intakes now? You reported at the last quarterly. Uh-huh. How is that playing out on retention with folks going into treatment and such?
So recently we just started an A team, if you will, or an accountability team. Mm-hmm. So when folks don't report to intake and they don't report to treatment, then we have a team that goes out and we knock on their door and we try to hunt them down, if you will, and get them into treatment as part of accountability. And so that group intake is working pretty well. Originally, we coined it as the pre-contemplative stage treatment group, but now we're modifying that to just get them into treatment and engaged so they can start changing their mind and changing their behavior. So, let's see. On some of the other significant division notes, if you go down halfway to the page, is we're openly recruiting currently for a case specialist position as part of the treatment division, as well as an alcohol and drug counselor. That open recruitment, I think, terminates on the 15th of September. We're excited to get another alcohol and drug counselor on board, as well as a case specialist position. That case specialist position, by the way, will be assigned to potentially a mentoring program that I'd like to get started within community corrections, and also would help with some of the admin duties, such as billing, which Denise and Angie had started nearly 2 years ago now. So we entered into a contract to receive a little over $80,000 to provide, and those are state funds again, to provide DUII treatment and A&D treatment for indigent people who are not on OHP. So you have a very select group of folks that don't necessarily qualify or have not yet applied for OHP, but they're still indigent and not able to pay for their treatment services. So that's what those funds are for, to target that specific population. We had another 20-year recognition, Denise Olson, yesterday. Again, I extend my appreciation to you commissioners for recognizing her. dedication for 20 years. She's fantastic, and is really the heart and soul of the treatment services division. Other significant department notes, we conducted a mid-year department goal assessment, recognizing six-month achievements and making adjustments to achieve the goals for the remainder of the year. I had forwarded that on to Commissioner DeYoung. And one of these exercises that we do at the beginning of the calendar year, I don't want it just to be lip service. And so our management team decided, you know what, let's take a mid-year snapshot of where we are going, what we've achieved, and make any type of adjustments that we need to achieve what we set out to do at the beginning of the calendar year. It was an excellent exercise, and we're happy to.
Did you find you were on track?
We did. As a matter of fact, we were on track way more than I anticipated at that particular time. And so there's a few more goals that we'd like to achieve, and we made those adjustments. But a lot of the things that we are talking about today were within those goals at the beginning of the calendar year. We received notice of state funding that I had already kind of went over, but we had an increase of community corrections for over $1 million from the last biennium, allowing for expanded services and increased personnel, which is the four positions that I reviewed in detail earlier. The CCA plan will be delivered to our local public safety coordinating council next month in October when we're scheduled to meet, and then on to you commissioners for final approval. The first justice reinvestment application for $1.1 million was submitted last week, and we're planning to submit an additional application to receive more funding to target prison usage of nonviolent offenders. That is the competitive process of the $7 million that the legislature allocated for justice reinvestment.
And that $7 million is statewide?
That's statewide, yeah. It's a very competitive process. It is for the reduction of prison bed usage. Right now, Josephine County's on track to be under our baseline for the last 3 years, so we look really good right now. I'm just a little bit worried about plateauing, and that could happen in the next 2 years. So right now is the time to apply for those.
Do you have access to any other counties just to see how they're doing? I mean, do you look better than...
We do. We do have access to the rest of the state, and not to boast or brag, but we are the top five in terms of prison reduction in the state of Oregon out of 36 counties. So, like I mentioned, we look really good right now to apply for these funds for reduction in prison usage because we already have the infrastructure in place to do those things. And we're unique here because I think we're unique here because all of our department heads, all of law enforcement get along. We collaborate together. We talk all the time, and the system just it works well, especially for any of the goals that LIPSIC sets. Let's see.
When do you anticipate hearing on the justice reinvestment? Did they give an idea of time frame?
I think the last biennium was in October, so the application was submitted in August, and then we found out in October. So this time, I would suspect it'd be a similar time frame. We'll find out in October. And that's for the first...
Not the $7 million additional,
right,
the standard GRI.
Yeah, which will be a little over $1.1 million coming to Josephine County.
I anticipate the $7 million will have a lot of negotiation back and forth between the counties that have applied.
Yeah.
Not the counties themselves, but with the CJC negotiating with them, would this work, would that work?
Yeah.
Because they've said they don't want any one county getting it. They don't want it going to the metropolitan area. So they're looking at trying to make sure that if it is spread out, but it also has to make an impact.
Right.
So they don't want to spread it so thin that nobody can do anything with it. So it'll be interesting to see.
I think where we have an advantage, if we have a successful program, they're probably not going to be too keen on throwing money at to start a program other than to further as more a successful program that's working. In my mind, that's what I would look at.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
Never know from up north.
That's right. That's right. Currently, we're actively participating in a statewide time study. It commenced on Tuesday, the 5th, through November 5th, which could justify, and this is not a typo, it could justify $1 billion allocated to community corrections statewide for the next 6 years after this current biennium, so 2019 to 2025. We celebrated National Parole and Probation Week in July, hosting a potluck with representation of multiple agencies showing support for community corrections practitioners and their efforts to protect the community and change people's lives. Commissioner DeYoung, I want to thank you for showing up and showing your support for all the folks that work really hard. So, yeah,
I saw the video you guys made for that. It was on the YouTube channel, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
a lot of the directors from all over the state.
And yeah, they were. It was funny because they were happy to participate. You know, Josephine County. When we go to these different statewide meetings, I boast about our programs. You know, and I try to change, you know, some people's mind to have some level of a negative perspective on Josephine County. And so a lot of the numbers that we're showing, it shows that we're doing really good things with, you know, comparatively very little. And so that I'm thankful for.
I think we're hearing that at the state level just about everywhere we go. Josephine County's not, we're not sitting around here. We aren't crying in our ice water. We're just going after it.
Yeah.
And I think that's across the state. I think, you know, like, for instance, that, hey, they're having fun down there in Josephine County with nothing.
Yeah.
And so that's really important. Our perception statewide is really changing.
Yeah.
Josephine County's turned the corner. I had a deal for So Ready the other day in London with three manufacturers that were looking at Southern Oregon.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, we painted a pretty good picture at lunch. You know, they said, well, gosh, it's exciting to hear something upbeat.
Yeah.
You know, because we were very upbeat in Josephine County.
Yeah.
So, good.
And the last part is that we're preparing to add 4 beds from transitional housing of female offenders on probation or post-prison supervision. And we're currently in the discussion phase. I know the board had a chance to convene and talk a little bit about the possibilities of the 4 beds of transitional housing for females. It is a need in our community. We have roughly 27 female offenders that are projected to be released from prison through December of 2018. These 4 beds will allow for roughly 15% to fill that gap of folks that need housing once they get released from prison. Again, it's a transitional temporary housing option, but it's something that is needed to get them stabilized so they can get a job, so they can do the other demands that are on their case plans formulated by the POs. So it's something that I'm excited about. We just have to work through a lot of different logistics with Ryan's office and others. So that's something that we're in the discussion phases at this time.
So I'm curious, I mean, 4 beds versus the cost of rehabilitating a house, a cost benefit, I guess, at some point on is it worth it for 4 beds? And wondering if there's other opportunities.
I haven't yet seen the numbers to get the building up to code or to make any of the modifications. So once we get those numbers, then I'll be presenting them to Commissioner DeYoung for some.
I had a conversation with Brian about this just to start in to say, you know, how far back is that building? Because it's been vacant for a while. And he said he gave me the impression that it shouldn't take too terribly much to get that thing up to speed, mm-hmm. because there's an awful lot of things that go through that building communication-wise. So mm-hmm. it's not been completely decommissioned mm-hmm. and shut down. So,
no, I actually really think it's an appropriate house for it. And I fully support that house going forward.
But I see your point. If it's, you know, gee, do we have to put a roof on it, paint the whole thing, and put sprinklers in or whatever? I, you know, that's up to Ryan, but he seemed to...
To me, 4 beds isn't a lot. It'd be nice if it were 6 to 10 or something like that, just considering we don't have any other houses for females other than contracted through options.
Yeah, and that's one of the challenges is just finding transitional housing that's appropriate. I did tour it 2 weeks ago with Karen Caskey, Welcome Home Oregon, who would be helping manage that specific property. And there's one bathroom there, and the kitchen is fairly small. So we thought, you know, maybe we could squeeze 5 in, maybe, you know, so we kind of compromised on the four at this time, and depending on what the modifications are to the house and how it goes, we may be able to make that adjustment, but I can't see it going up from four to even mm-hmm. six, so I would think four is
years ago, that was the in-between, mm-hmm. is what they called it. How many kitchens they have in there then?
That was 4th and G Street. That was a block away, and we're using that. That's the Ferguson house. Okay. We have men in that house right now. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because it was in between when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But, okay, so you're working on the negotiation for that. I'm curious about something that comes to mind is the Faith House. It's a block away, or two blocks that way. I don't know if they're being utilized. At one point, we used to use them a lot for if folks wanted to go there. Now, we never forced anybody to go over there because it's faith-based, but mm-hmm. if they wanted to go over there. But at some point, they had issues with folks coming out of prison, and I don't know if that's something that enough time has gone by. It might be worth renegotiating because they can house 10, 15 at that house. Mm-hmm. So if they're being underutilized, I'm wondering if that would be worth developing a partnership.
Yeah, the advantage of running your own house that we see, that I see, is that we get to set the rules, we get to set the expectations, and that's what's exciting about this particular opportunity, is that we would be managing that specific house, and so there wouldn't be necessarily any controversy of or changes of rules that we didn't really approve of. So that's what I appreciate about being able to manage our own. So.
Well, and there's some accountability to not, I mean, to having the POs be able to go right over and treatment go right over and all that other kind of stuff if you can. So mm-hmm. hopefully it'll work out soon for you.
And I think that's all I have, unless you have some questions for me.
No, thank you. Okay. I'm excited for you guys.
Yep. Good job, Nate. Keep it up.
Thanks, sir.
Finance report. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I have to get you switched off of that company someday.
Arthur O'Hare, Finance Director, and I have one thing that I'm bringing forward, and this is informational for the most part. Typically, the library, just as JCLI, has two requests in for disbursement of library trust funds, one from the George Borders to finish up, and this is for the fiscal year 16-17, so they usually just submit once a year for disbursement. So this, they're asking for $6,300 from George Borders, and this is the finishing up the children's library renovation that they had this past year. And the other one is $2,600 from K. Jean Turner for art and art-related books. And typically, I just bring this to the board's attention so you know what's happening with the trust fund. And that's what I'm doing
right now.
And those
will just be transferred over. We won't have that goes to there.
Right. We just cut a check to reimburse them for costs that they've already paid for.
And we just pull it out on our end and it's done.
Yeah. And it's done. Now, the trust funds themselves, there's still balance left in both of those trust funds. So I'm still working with legal to get them to put together a official, let's move this over to the district now that they're a permanent permanent entity. But that's what I brought forward. Lots of little things going on, but as far as just, you know, for the record, so that it's brought to your attention, those two requests have come in, and I plan on...
Is there any requirement before you transfer funds that they have their board of directors and be up and running and fully staffed?
No, these requests are actually going to JCLI, these two payments, like they have been for the past several years, they're going to JCLI. But when we transfer the trust funds themselves, or at least the attempt, that's what we're trying to get done, is that will go to the district.
District
or the foundation, whichever one that legal
allows. There's like
allows.
Three different
silos
over there.
JCLI is going to go away, I believe. My understanding is they'll disappear as soon as the district gets up and running. All righty.
So will you be, with our approval, you will take this to legal and legal bring it forward?
As far as the trust fund, the final transition of the trust funds? Okay. Yes. As far as these disbursements are concerned, normally no. These just,
those we just,
the requests come in, they're in the budget, I cut the checks and pay them. It's just bringing it to the attention of the board so that you know what's going on with the with these trust funds. And that's
okay.
It for me.
I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you had any
sir.
Questions, okay. Thanks.
If there's any other board, any other business that should come before the board, now is the time. Seeing none, we're going to move on to board business. A is a proposal text amendment to Josephine County. Sorry about that. Got it. Proposed text amendment to Josephine County, Oregon Rural Land Development Code, RLDC, to address growing OLCC regulated marijuana on rural residential lands, road, and water.
Hey, my name is Julie Schmelzer. I'm the Director of Community Development. With me is Nora Schwartz. She's a planner, too. She's very well versed on the road issues. She used to work with the Public Works Department. So I brought her along in case we have questions on the roads. The two issues that were relayed over for discussion, or the final issues, I believe, were access and then water. Based on conversation the other day, I did remove the water standards from that. We can put that back in if the board wants.
I just our copy in the book is not the color-coded version, so as far as seeing the changes and all that kind of stuff, based on, is this what you emailed on Tuesday after we talked, or is it further changed since then?
No, it's Tuesday after we talked.
Okay, so hold on just a second as I find that email so I can see it in color, because black and white just all blurs together for me.
It looks like this, if that helps.
Yeah, I found the email, so just saying, there's three attachments. Okay.
Okay, so based on our conversation, I removed the water regulation.
So on the black and white version, it's going to be...
I got it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Page 73. Okay, go ahead, Julie, sorry.
Okay, so I'll start with the last one first. I think it's easier to get out of the way. So based on the conversation the other day, I removed the water truck standard. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that's okay. And then looking at the access standard, we were trying to figure out exactly what type of roads that should apply to. And I was going back and forth, do we look at restricted residential, limited residential? Do we get into that level of detail? Mm-hmm. And in speaking with Nora, it sounded like maybe the best thing that would work would be to say, nor off any other maintained road. And she actually just suggested, nor off any other maintained public right-of-way. So
okay, any other owner-maintained.
It's nor off any owner-maintained public right-of-way.
Instead of maintained road.
Yeah.
So that's different than the email one, too. Hold on just a second.
She just gave me that suggestion.
So what exemptions could be there? I mean, if they have contract with all the owners of the road who've given written permission or something, is there an exemption to that could be put in place? Or
No. They already, most of them already have maintenance plans in place, agreeing that everybody has to pay. As we discussed the other day, the problem is the people are coming in, growing, tearing up the road, and leaving, so they're not getting the roads repaired. So the owners, the people with the homes, are stuck with it. So this was the way to ensure that basically the roads aren't torn up and the neighbors aren't left holding the bill to repair the road.
And again, to me, why is this our level of dealing with when they have maintenance agreements in place already? There's contracts already in place that is on private property. And if somebody in that homeowners association or neighborhood agreement is outside of that, there's already a possibility that they take them to court. They can lien the property for what's owed.
Well, not all of them have maintenance plans on them, okay, or maintenance agreements on them. So that's one thing to consider. The other one is the experiences that are shared with us are people are trying to get the growers to do something. They just keep ignoring the landowner. Yes, they could take them to court. It's kind of an undue burden on the on the other homeowners to have to take somebody to court to enforce something that they agreed they were going to do in the beginning.
Are these maintenance agreements, are they transferable? In other words, if for instance,
yes,
somebody buys, we've got a five houses, and this guy buys us back.
Successors, heirs, and assigns.
They do. Okay.
However, many road maintenance agreements are the equivalent of a handshake.
Yeah, but I was
and
say,
then there are others that are actually legally recorded.
Legality is probably out there a mile.
Yes, yes. And typically, the handshake version are with the roads that have been in existence for quite some time. They're still viable roads, but there is no legally recorded document that further substantiates people's responsibilities for maintenance. It's just, we all get along, we all pitch in.
There's a pretty good population of people, of growers that just go and lease their land from Edith and Harold, that have lived on this land for 40 years, and they approach Edith and Harold and say, we want to lease your land, we're going to grow on it, so on and so forth. Go in, pull your drapes down, turn the music up, and we'll do everything. And Edith and Harold need to be to know that if they're, you know, they've got the agreement with all their neighbors, and they've leased to an organization that's just going to rip the road up, that they will be responsible for that. There isn't any, I guess it stems back to the handshake agreement, again, to what level the actual agreement is for maintenance on the road. Because it should follow, you know, Edith and Harold decide to rent out, you know, part of their, whatever they're getting for it. Maybe Edith, hey, you're going to have to revitalize that road before winter gets here.
The wording of this section isn't very nor off any owner maintained road. Doesn't feel like it fits where it's at. OLC regulated marijuana production site located in a rural residential zone shall be accessed off of a private road or easement, shall be accessed off unless producer owns all the land abutting said private road or easement, nor off any owner maintained road.
And we'd say public right of way in this case. That's the change we made.
It just seems like it doesn't fit of the or easement.
Would you prefer it say nor access off any other maintained road?
Owner, if you stop where it says accessed and put, you know, maybe another sentence that says or off of any owner maintained road, because that's what you're doing. We just got that big long off a private road and easement unless the producer owns a.
Well, I understand you're saying put it.
It goes up after easement.
Put off or any owner maintained road put in there after easement.
Yeah.
And then producer owns all the land.
Yeah.
So if you move that into easement, off any owner maintained road, unless the producer owns the land abutting college. Right?
Yes.
That would make it.
Yeah, private road, easement, or.
Does that make
any
sense?
Any owner public right away.
That makes it flow a little bit, I think, easier.
I think so, too.
Okay.
We can move it forward to have the language. I think it's one that's going to be debated and challenged and not necessarily. I mean, that's why there's a hearing that you go forward and you go through them, but at least getting the language agreed upon to move forward with.
And I'm glad we're addressing this road maintenance stuff, because that's one of the subjects that comes up. You know, hey, they're tearing my road up. You know, hey, guys. But you would get the same thing if somebody moved in and had four teenage boys with pickup trucks that came and went a lot. You know, and they move in and all of a sudden, hey, they're tearing the road up. You know, so
That might be a little easier to maintain because there's still a homeowner there,
yeah,
and they're year-round versus somebody who comes in, does a crop, and leaves.
Yeah.
is not the property owner still just as equally responsible for the damage? So regardless of a grower coming and growing and leaving, the property is still owned by somebody.
It's still owned by, well, under these rules, it would be owned by the grower.
So they're under, I mean, what happens for any other private road where a logging truck goes through because somebody cleared their own property and it destroys the road? Do they all pay equally, or is the person who ran a logging truck because they cleared their property pay it?
Depends what that maintenance agreement says.
Yeah, that's
it. But that's just it. There's maintenance agreements already in place for people to deal with this. There is a property owner that was the cause of the damage. There's already a course for them to go for through civil court. And that is an appropriate response if somebody is not taking care of their legal obligations as you take them to court.
Well, and keep in mind, too, when you're talking logging, you're talking like a woodlot resource zone or a forest zone. These are rural residential. The roads we're talking about are typically those that are serving like five or fewer lots, oftentimes a dead-end road. Well, they would be a dead end.
I see the importance of putting this in there just strictly because, no matter how many times you name, it's named somewhere else in the code, but this is a code specifically pointed towards an industry, I think. And so, therefore, you need to say that it applies here, too, as it does in other parts of the code. This thing can be, the basic language, other than the first five or six words, could be on... applied to anything in other parts of the code, is what I'm saying. So I see the value in putting it here, just to bring it up. When you hand somebody that piece of paper and say, this is a new code that has approved by the Board of County Commissioners, that's in there. Not that it'll refer to such and such and such and such.
One thought I had stemming from your scenario of, Bob and Edna, who've owned a property on that road for 40 years. What we might want to think about is maybe one or more of those landowners are not in a financial position to adequately deal with going to court. Mm-hmm. If you couple that with the potential of the amount of damage that could be caused by this type of industry, if you will, on that road, maybe it's a disproportionate risk for the folks who are already residing on that road. Maybe, as I say, can't afford to pursue through the court process. I don't know if it's even appropriate to think along those lines, but it came to my mind.
It's not why we make legislation.
No.
And without an exemption of... they might not own all the land abutting it, but what if they did have signed contracts or a permission slip of each of those property owners? Then why are we regulating somebody out of that they've coordinated with their neighbors in a way that is not harmful? I guess from my standpoint, I still think the easiest thing is to say no commercial operations of any sort, any industry on residential property, except go through a permitting process to see your impact on your neighborhood for commercial and residential. Mm-hmm. Then it's not going after an industry. It's not anything specific. You're looking at how does this business in a residential area impact, and it keeps it simple and neutral and fair to everybody. It's any business in a residential gets equal treatment. And if there's a way to this, and it's absolutely not when everybody on that road is in agreement, there's got to be a means for somebody to have an exception when they all know the risk, or they, I'm releasing the risk. We agree to pay the thing. We don't mind him being there, or something like that.
They could apply for a variance. I mean, we don't do variances very often. You know, I think one thing to keep in mind is the reason why we're doing this and targeting marijuana is this is what two-thirds of those that voted in May had asked us to do. So we're looking at how to achieve what was in that ballot measure. Then also because the state says you can. This is the one crop, the one thing you can single out and put the rules on in place to help your county reach what the public wants and be in compliance with your comprehensive plan. You know, we do have transportation sections in the comprehensive plan. our intent is to have the roads maintained. And, you know, especially when you're looking at, like, nor off any other or any owner-maintained public right-of-way, keep in mind, this is for the reserved for the public. So it should be maintained to a degree. And it's, you know, if everybody was responsible and was maintaining their road, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. But that's not what we're finding.
And we're talking civil action. So you say, okay, well, you're in, and Commissioner Morgan bringing up a good point. Yeah, a civil action can be taken, but civil action has to point towards something that's on the books. And so this puts it on the books.
Good point.
For a judge, no?
No, you can show damage without something being on the books. You can show that the harm has been made by a neighbor towards you. And there's farmers that put a chemical on their field and it went up in the air and 20 miles away landed on somebody else's field. And they were able to successfully sue in civil court, showing an impact on that property. It has nothing to do with what's on the books. Civil court's not criminal law. It's not rural development land code. It's civil court. It's so, I mean, I'm just saying that, well, it is what it is. So you've got the feedback from your liaison and Commissioner Dion, which is enough to move forward with it.
Okay.
And
then are you okay with the removal of the water?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
I don't want to restrict that.
Okay. So it's was there anything else maybe that you had questions on in there?
What is the time frame from here for notifications and timelines and
well
publications in the paper and all
sure.
that kind of stuff?
So to try and coincide with, I think our goal was to when on January 1st, when the state's rules changes, we wanted ours to be right around that time frame. So in order to do that, this would have to be heard the third week in September.
So that would be the 20th.
The 20th.
At the.
And we don't have 2 weeks' notice right now to do that.
We need 10 on this first one, I think.
10 business days. We're still past that.
10 days.
10 calendar.
Yeah.
Okay.
10 calendar.
I did tell Pat I would stop by after and just go through the changes with her so that we can finalize everything.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 calendar only brings us to the 17th.
Yeah, so anything that week is open. Commissioner DeYoung and I are out Thursday, Friday that week for our last county college.
Monday but I have surgery, and we do these on Wednesdays, so it would be the 20th.
Alrighty.
20th?
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll work with legal to get it going through
yep.
the process.
And then the second one would be 2 weeks after that, which would be
the
first Wednesday in
October.
Yeah. Commissioner, can I have a copy back from my binder?
Sure.
Thank you.
Always hesitate to do something of this magnitude on the 20th, but Simon got broad shoulders. He'll be here on the 21st and 22nd.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Right. Thank you.
The last item is matters from commissioners.
I had a city officer approached me and wanted to know what we could do about trespassing people off of the steps of Ambassador. They don't have anything in their books that say we have anything that allows them to actually take people away from there.
I would suggest you contact legal and ask
legal.
Them to
talk
look in
to
options.
Legal. And then the next thing is I told him, I said, well, my only... I said, we'll look what we can do for doing that, put the loitering sign, no loitering signs and whatnot at the entrance to Ambassador, but we're going to need a loitering or vagrancy law in the city of Grants Pass, and we keep getting told by Grants Pass legal counsel that that's can't do that, but we also got told that there was no such thing as a panhandling law where you could hand stuff from people, and as you and I were on city council, we got that done. So I'm interested in finding out what we need for a vagrancy or loitering law. and if there's something that would be challenged.
So what they're asking us to do is actually give them a trespass warning letter that is just on file for ambassador around the time. It would not work for us because we're a building open to the public. Ambassador is not. It's only as events happen.
Right.
During business hours or when an event's happening, they can't have that there. So again, it needs to go to legal to see what options are, and it's not something we can.
I'll put that down. That's where I want to move towards anyway, because they said, you know, kind of well, our hands are tied, but they're doing a good job. They're over there four times a day, rousting people out.
I understand. When have we got any other update on when they're going to be getting to the?
Yeah, we're still. Brian Johnson and I from facilities walked that property again the end of last week, and we're struggling with getting a cement contractor to even bid the ramp. So, but we're going to get started on removal of the walls and the landscaping and stuff. We'll have that done before winter sets in. We plant and, you know, map out where everything's going to go, and then they can go. We're going to start moving. They've moved some of the hardscape. They've removed some of it. They're going to take the walls out and stuff. I'm going to try your idea of taking that whole slab with the checkerboards and the seats and everything, try to pull it all up as one deal and transport it around the other side of the building. We'll see. We'll give it a try. Good idea.
Anything else that you have for us?
Nope.
Okie dokie. I just want to give an update on the fire stuff. Last night, they had over 200 plus lightning strikes between Josephine and Jackson County, which we share a district with the Forest Service with ODF. And we have 6 new fires in the district. They weren't able to fly last night, but National Guard's coming in with equipment today to do recon on the fire. We're hoping that it was able to slow things down.
Did you get any rain anywhere?
They got a tenth to a quarter inch of rain, but the smoke was still too bad. So the largest of the fires that started last night was actually over in Jackson County in the Antelope area, East Antelope area. But ODF is pretty good about getting things out. The weirdest thing about it is we do have flash flood warnings in effect for Josephine and Jackson County.
I've heard that. If we have flash flood warnings, that means 2.5 inches of rain in a half an hour. And if that's it, the fire's out. But I don't get that.
Well, we would hope to get that. But the other side of it is there was actually a tornado warning in Gold Hill yesterday. So we're having weird weather. And that's just all I could say is it's weird weather. But keeping up to date with all the stuff with emergency services. And I should say Cannabis Advisory Committee, I sent out the agenda to the committee members. We're going to forward it out. I sent it out to all of our staff saying, if you got any amendments, get them to me. I waited 24 hours, having heard nothing. I sent it out. And then I heard that apparently there were some amendments requested that didn't make it to me. So there may be an amended agenda coming out. But in the meantime, we're going to get that publicized and get started. I am hoping to bring the bylaws to the commissioners on Tuesday. And or we'll go from there. So we need to get those approved and ready to go. But first meeting, it'll be on Tuesday, the 12th, and at the Floral Building at the fairgrounds. And then the next meeting will be on the 26th. So I'm trying to think if there was
something else. And Rob is going to be on the 26th?
Correct.
Perfect.
So I don't think there was anything else. So do we need to do a general discussion this afternoon?
I don't have anything, and I don't know whether Commissioner Harris can read back.
I don't think so. So
I don't think so. So if we want to skip that one, I'm okay with that.
All right. So we will be canceling our general discussion for this afternoon, and seeing no further business, we are adjourned at 10:24.